What a long, hot summer it's been for Reading fans, and welcome to the depths of July, where we are finding ourselves just creaking into the first signs of energy and momentum for the new season. Welcome to the Tyler Sten podcast episode, what are we now? 301, I guess. It's been a while. I'm still your host, Mark Mayer. Welcome to the show by Reading fans, for Reading fans. We're here. I've just told the two guys who are with us just to have a little chat, really, just to go over kind of what we've done over the summer, see where the club is at the moment, and to decide whether we are more optimistic or less optimistic going into the new season, now that we've had a couple of friendlies, a few new signings, and the new season is actually not even that far away. So to do that with me tonight is the editor of the Tyler Sten, Mr. Simeon Pickup. How's it going, mate?
Hello, hello. I'm good. I've been sweltering in the heat in the last couple of days, but good that's behind us and looking forward to the season coming back.
Yeah, we were just saying off air that it felt like the heatwave kind of started with the West Ham friendly, which was a lovely, lovely summer's day. And then it kind of ended with the start of the Wimbledon game, which, Sim, you were saying was a torrential downpour after some serious heat.
Yeah, I went there expecting 35 degree sweltering heat, and then got there and it immediately started going down with torrential rain, and thought I should have brought a brolly, but that's the English weather for you.
Well, a man who's certainly no stranger to torrential downpours is Wales's own Ben Thomas. Ben, how's it going, mate? View from the Dolan end, of course. How's it been for this summer?
Yeah, it's been all right, actually. Yeah, it's been good. It's excited to get back to what we do best in terms of, you know, the pod and writing articles and stuff this season. So yeah, very, very, you know, looking forward to the season, bizarrely, and going from there.
Right, so let's get on to it then. And in just a moment, we'll be going through the summer so far and what we can expect for the season ahead.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetylehurstend.com.
Right, guys, let's start then with our feelings as the season ended and just give a kind of overview as to how we were feeling going into it. And I can basically sum this up by saying, Reading at the start of the summer, we're going to finish bottom of the Championship. That was just how it was. The amount of players we had, the quality of players we had, and all that sort of stuff, the financial troubles, I just felt we were going to finish bottom. Now, everything we've done since then has just been a kind of incremental nudge. If you kind of imagine a kind of worm on a graph like they have in the cricket or whatever, we've just added on a few more runs or something like that. And every movement has basically generally been a positive, I would say, at the moment. Sim, from where you kind of started at the summer, at what point did you think things were kind of starting to look better, or, you know, maybe even starting to look a bit worse than you thought they were?
It's a bit of a tricky question to answer, actually, because the end of last season feels like a world away, given all that's happened and all the random news that's just seemed kind of relentless at times this summer. It felt very punishing for a lot of June, when we're really kind of struggling to get any kind of incomings. I think Lumley was the first signing for a little while. On the contracts front, it looked nasty with Swift leaving and Laurent leaving and Rinomota leaving. And I think probably the lowest point was Rinomota going. And it just felt like if we had any good players at all with any kind of ambition, then they'd be going off to another club. But then we saw Tom Holmes sign on. We saw Andy Yeardom sign on as well. And it just kind of reminded me that there were some sources of hope, I guess. Tom Ince helped as well. And it's been very gradual. As you said, it's not been kind of like a sudden realisation that things are getting better. But there have been some positive moments also on the academy as well. I think Imari Samuels is the only person that's not stayed on. Tyrell Ashcroft as well, of course. But otherwise, we've shown that we have been able to get some good business done. And a lot of that has been down to Mark Bowen coming in and Brian Carey coming in. Obviously, we don't know the exact details of what they do behind the scenes, but the general impression has been Reading have finally got the house in order. We finally know what we want to do and how we want to do it. And I don't know if that reflects on the players that we talk to signings coming in and to players that we're trying to keep on in terms of new contracts. But it feels like we're a much more competent organisation. And if we can keep that going on, the summer's going to be difficult, obviously, and we've got a lot more to do in the rest of the summer, but I'm that bit more optimistic because of how we've run so far.
Yeah, Ben, the moment when we started to look like a football club again or at least the semblance of a football club, was the reintroduction of Mark Bowen, which certainly didn't set the pulses racing for a lot of fans. I think we'd all view Mark Bowen as a kind of steady but not kind of necessarily inspiring figure. And perhaps that's the best Reading can get. Perhaps that's what Reading need at the moment. But for me, it did just feel like the subsequent interview he did with Tim Deller for BBC Barks just kind of showed that Reading had a guy in charge of the football. I think he's head of football, so that's pretty clear. A guy in charge of the football who knew football and who knew how to build a football club. Now, his credentials as a manager, I think we're pretty comfortable on, as he's not a manager anymore. He's had a stint at AFC Wimbledon, a club that also have a lot of problems that he couldn't turn around. And obviously has come back now, probably because of his links with Dai Young, and he knows the club and everything. Kind of good and bad bits about that, I'd say, for, you know, knowing what's good and being part of it and knowing what's bad and being part of it. But Ben, I think the reintroduction of Mark Bowen has been a pretty solid base to build around from this point.
Yeah, I mean, look, anyone listening to this who's read anything I've done and listened to before will know that I'm a massive Mark Bowen fan. And the reason for that is that he is stable and he's got a good contact network, but also him coming back to the role that he's occupying is not a gamble from the club. You know, bringing Brian Carey in is not a gamble. You know, some of the players we're bringing in, they're not gambles. And this is what the football club has done repeatedly over the last 4 or 5 years, where they've just gambled on managers, they've gambled on, you know, people at the club in terms of off the field positions, they've gambled on players, and it hasn't worked. And really what I was looking for personally was for them to get the house in order off the pitch. You know, Paul Ince is not everyone's cup of tea, but getting him sorted and saying, right, he's going to be the manager for next season, this is coaching team, getting Bowen in, getting Carey in. You know, if you've got that back room and that upstairs office in place, then they're going to be able to bring in the right players for the kind of system and the tactics that they want to fulfil at the football club. So, you know, for me, it was a bit of a surprise that Bowen's agreed to come back, but I was very, very pleased with that because you know the direction we're heading. And, you know, we'll talk about kind of expectations for the season a little bit later on. But all we've got to do is stay in this league next season. That's it. Anything else is a bonus. And I think realistically, you know, the players that we're starting to bring in now, you know, Sim mentioned the players signing new contracts. They're the players that you probably want to keep. Renamota, as Sim said, was one of the ones that I was a bit like, really would have liked to have kept him. But the others, it was pretty much nailed on. They were going to leave anyway. I think it's been a lot slower than a lot of fans would like, but we are where we are. And there are green shoots at the moment that there is some sort of stability. And the fact that we've got players signing 3-year deals, 2-year deals means that there's, you know, potentially a bit of stability moving into, you know, the season after this as well. And that's really important because, you know, we've had slapdash attitude to transfer markets, slapdash attitude to different managers coming in. You know, we know what Paul Ince is like. He's straightforward, same as Bowen, same as Brian Carey as well. So there are, you know, facets of the club that are starting to get organised and consistent. And that's what we need right now. That's all Reading Football Club needs. And, you know, moving forward, I hope that it's going to be successful. Whether or not we are successful this season does remain to be seen. But as I said, there are, you know, as I said in the video after the game against West Ham, it's not difficult to not get carried away, but I do feel a lot more positive, you know, now than I did this time last year, and hopefully a lot of other fans do. And it's going to bring a few people back to the stadium to get behind the team.
Yeah, well, speaking of which, we'll have a little chat later, Ben, about things getting back to the stadium and entertainment value at the stadium, which we might have to have a little bit of a chat about later on. It's funny that we've got this far into the show and we've not even mentioned Paul Ince being appointed manager. Of course, was one of the main things of the summer. I think it's just the kind of something that everyone's gotten used to now. It's obviously happened for a little while. But Sim, just to kind of think about how you felt the moment that he did arrive, and I think most fans were kind of like 5 out of 10 on it, 4 out of 10. Has your impression of it improved since then? Are you more happy to have Ince now compared to when he was officially hired?
So my view last season was that it wouldn't necessarily be a bad appointment. I think he certainly deserved, in his own right, another go at it, given that at the end of the day, we brought him in to keep us in the division and he did exactly that. And that's really not something we can take for granted. You go back to January or February when things look really toxic and really sour, the idea of someone coming in and keeping us up, far from something that could be taken for granted. I was, however, concerned of whether or not he could develop us and move us forwards in the longer run. But to be honest with you, over the last few pre-season games, I'm actually quite optimistic about it. Reading don't look like a team that's just going to kind of repeat the same tactics that we had last season in seasons before. We seem to be going to more of a 4-3-3 in some games, or a 3-4-3 or a 3-5-2. Whether those things actually work brilliantly straight from the off is one matter, but seemingly he has ideas. He's trying to do things tactically. He's trying to come up with some coherent ideas, which is really encouraging. And then when you look at the ethos he seems to be building at the club, what with Reading coming back from a goal down against West Ham to get the 1-1 draw, it's really encouraging, and it really looks like we're building something with some substance. How much of that is down to him specifically, or to James Oliver Pearce, who came in from Wimbledon, or Mark Bowen behind the scenes? It's hard to know exactly what the balance is, but certainly Paul Ince seems to be a good asset for us at the minute, and I'm looking forward to seeing how he develops this team as a unit, basically. Because if we're going to be successful next season, whether it's just staying up or even kind of pushing higher up the table, we need that really good togetherness, that spirit and that grit. And so what I like about Paul Ince last season and his shortcomings last season, he knew how to get that spirit and that fight into the team, and hopefully he can keep it going.
Yeah, I think that's the thing to remember, Paul Ince, is that no matter what you think tactically or whatever, he is not football illiterate in whatever way you want to put it. He knows the game, and whether he knew the game in the 90s or now or whatever, his championship football isn't, you know, it's not kind of Barcelona, Bayern Munich levels. It's still championship football. It has progressed, obviously, since Paul Ince was playing, but he is someone who knows English football, and he's obviously, yeah, it's not like he's been hiding in a cave for the 8 years when he was out of management, still knows the game. As we've seen from Reading's performances last season, there were good moments, there are bad moments. It's a completely different kettle of fish when you enter it from the start of a season, because, you know, building that spirit from day one is a bit more difficult, particularly with new faces and stuff like that. So I think the jury will obviously be out on Paul Ince for a little while, and I just hope that we keep him we're not in a situation in, you know, 4 months where we're doing a Paul Ince is sacked show, because he's, you know, lost his job with Reading bottom of the table. Whether Reading stick with him if we do end up bottom of the table, TBC. But yeah, I think probably the mood around Paul Ince has improved. And, you know, let's continue, finish off our talk of personnel with some transfer chat, because it's been such an interesting summer. For those who haven't followed it perfectly, Reading are in a transfer embargo still. I actually thought that the points deduction was going to kind of end this stuff, but because we've got a suspended 6-point deduction still hanging over us, we are still unable to pay any kind of fee for a player. And therefore, it is basically only frees or loans that we can do. And so what we have done to reel off the full list so far, Tom Ince has joined. Dean Bozanis, whatever his name is, in goal. Shane Long, Sam Hutchinson are the permanent signings. Then Joe Lumley, Tyrese Fauna, and Jeff Hendrick on loan. We'll get onto the glory of Shane Long arriving in just a minute, Ben. But generally speaking, out of that list of names, which is the one you're kind of most looking forward to? Which is the name that actually really sprung out for you?
Well, the name that didn't spring out, and I think kind of set us off the wrong foot in terms of transfers, with Joe Lumley, because obviously he got absolutely rated and slated by Borough fans. And I personally felt that was really unfair, because, you know, we have to judge players in terms of how they do for us. So I think that kind of set the mood sort of early doors in pre-season. It wasn't great, really. I think in terms of the standout players, you know, Hendrick obviously is a fantastic addition to the squad. He's already proved, you know, in pre-season that he knows his way around the football pitch. But the one for me is Hutchinson, because, you know, I've watched him in a couple of games pre-season, and he's exactly what we need. You know, there is a versatility there, you know, central midfield or defensive midfield, and obviously centre-back as well. But he was absolutely fantastic on Saturday. He really was exceptional. And I'm just really pleased that he's decided to join on for 2 years. So there's a lot of positives there. You know, Fauna didn't really know an awful lot about, if I'm being completely honest. Bouzanis, I'm going to go with Bouzanis, unless it's just Dean. Again, very little about, but seems okay. You know, seems like a good character. So there's a lot of positives to take out of it. And considering the restrictions we are under, I think the work so far has been good. You know, we're all going to talk about that left-hand side of defence, particularly if we're looking at the kind of the 3-4-3 formation, because at the moment I don't see any players that we've got in the squad stepping up properly to that kind of left wing back position. But you know, Guinness Walker and El Mahani, I mean, they look okay as well. So they're certainly being creative in what they're trying to do in the transfer market and kind of thinking outside the box a little bit.
On the left back point, Junior Hoylett obviously is signed permanently, or he's not really a signing, is he? But he did kind of go, certainly signed after June 30th. So I guess we would have to count him as kind of leaving and coming back. And Junior Hoylett as a, you know, I suppose what I'm getting at here is that there is versatility to an extent in these players, isn't it? Tom Ince can kind of play anywhere in midfield, and Junior Hoylett slotting in at left back could well be where we end up now, couldn't it?
I mean, personally, I'd hate that. I mean, he joined because of the amount of DMs that I sent him. So I think he's just given in and just gone, yeah, I'll just do it for another year just to get this guy off my back, really. But I mean, he was, I don't think he enjoyed it at all on Saturday. You know, he will play there because he's a good character, but that's not his position, really. He needs to be a lot further up the pitch to have any sort of impact. So, yeah, he could do that. But I get the feeling that, you know, within it's getting rid of the other trialists that we had, you know, around the kind of Benfica game and at St. George's Park. I just feel like he's not going to settle for players that could do that job. I think he's going to try and get players that naturally can do that job. And, you know, again, from what I've seen of Guinness Walker, he looks pretty good too. But, you know, that's where we are. These are the kind of players that we're looking at. And I do feel, as we've said already on the pod, that Ince does have a plan and there are some variations to what he wants to do. But we're going to have to get some depth on that left-hand side if we're going to play wing-backs. So, you know, we've got another couple of weeks to see what we can do and go from there, really.
Sim, one of the things I remember Mark Bowen talking about in that interview with BBC Barks about signing players and injuries is the idea of signing players who aren't prone to injury. We've obviously had a lot of trialists. We won't go through them one by one because I've blatantly not heard of all of them. So one of the things that I did realise from the trialists is TT did a little thread on a lot of them. Jacob Davenport, Julien Janvier, people like that who evidently aren't going to stay at the club. A lot of them did seem to have injury problems before they came. And so we've ended up with a lot of trialists, but only so far one assigned in Sam Hutchinson and, I guess, Michael Craig in the reserve side. So what have you made of the kind of approach to trialists so far? Connor Wickham is another name who I'd have never thought was good enough to be playing for Reading this season, and obviously isn't because he's not going to stay. So it's been I suppose, naturally, there is just an element of trial and error, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly. Nice pun, whether that was intended or not, with the trial and error.
I'll take it.
look, I mean, Reading need to be inventive in the transfer window this summer, given that there's only so many loan players that we can bring in. I think that's worth remembering. It's not like we can bring in 12 loan players and build our side like that. We do have to bring in free transfers. And look, if we're going to bring in anyone half decent on a free transfer, you're going to have to compromise somewhere, whether it's someone who's really old like Shane Long or someone who's gone down to League One like Sam Hutchinson. You're not going to get a really good free transfer wanting to come to Reading. There's going to be some element of risk in there. And obviously it's up to us to try and work out how much of a risk these certain players are going to be. Brandon Ormond, Ottawa is another interesting example. Someone who seemed to do quite well out in, I think it was in the Dutch second tier, immediately got injured. As soon as we get him in on trial, we may have to kind of wait for him to get fit and then sign him or something. Look, there are problems with probably every signing that we're going to bring in. Joe Lumley's another interesting case in point that he had a really poor season last season in terms of individual errors, but we still have to go in for a player like that because it's probably the best we can do. maybe we see other trialists come in over the next couple of weeks or whenever in the season we have to do it. But as long as we've got people like Mark Bowen, Paul Ince, Brian Carey, who have that knowledge, not able to pick out good players, I'm not really quite so worried, because we have that experience. We have that ability to kind of to see whether players are going to work out or not. Injuries, obviously, is a really key point. If we've looked at Jacob Davenport, for example, and seen that he's not going to be able to play that many games this season, it's not really worth taking the risk. Maybe if it's a really, really good player that we're able to bring in, the only problem is injuries, that's one thing. But if it's someone that you need to rely on week in, week out, it's not worth doing.
Yeah, one player that has arrived is Yassine Ben Almani, who was, I suppose he looked relatively decent in the 10 minutes I saw him against West Ham, a player with Scunthorpe, Chesham United and Harrow Boa on his recent list of clubs. And I suppose the problem is with the free agent pool is that it's always diminishing. It will not grow from now until the end of the transfer window. And Reading have to get signings signed off by the EFL, which is a bit of an annoyance, which led to Sam Hutchinson only being announced today when he's basically signed for the club for a few days, which is just going to hold Reading back. But let's round off this little part of the chat with the mention, of course, Shane Long coming back. I can remember so vividly watching him come through as an 18-year-old in the team, having joined as kind of Kevin Doyle's mate for definitely under £100,000, I think it was. I'm not even sure what Shane Long's fee was, whether it was anything. Doyle's was under £100,000 as well. So I remember that. I can remember him playing the Swansea playoff final that Reading lost, and that effectively, I mean, it really felt like it was his last game for the club, and up until hopefully in a couple of weeks it was. So to see him come back to the club and Reading fair play getting the Oracle involved as well, finally Shane Long spotted at the Oracle for real this time, and then turning out against West Ham. Didn't play against Wimbledon. I'm not sure if we had confirmation as to why yet, but probably just generally building his fitness and everything. The West Ham game, though, to see him come off the bench and have a little bit of an ovation from the few thousand fans there, and just to, you know, see him in that iconic running style and everything, getting in amongst it, winning a free kick and stuff like that, Ben, it was great to see. And I think it's just it's a sign of what's to come from a player who, in reality, we can't expect kind of 10 goals of a season from. He probably won't start that many games with Lucas Schau being up there and Yaku Mate as well. So it's not just a feel-good signing, although obviously that's one of the things it is. But this, what do you think it is going to bring to the squad if he's not going to start that many games?
I think he's more loved now than he was the first stint, to be honest. Like, I mean, it's been borderline hysteria, which, to be honest, you know, is a positive thing, because it's a feel-good factor, as you say. And I think it's really nice to see, you know, particularly the hashtag being really positive and excited about that signing and sort of everyone coming together with it. I mean, I feel really old now, because you kind of say vividly, I remember him really, really clearly. And I remember my dad ringing me and saying, oh, yeah, we've just signed two lads from Ireland, like the non-league Irish or whatever. And I said, all right, where have you seen that? He's like, I was on CFAX. CFAX. But, you know, look, it took him a while the first time round because of his age and, you know, maybe the transition from, you know, from moving countries or whatever. But, look, he... In that last season, as I wrote the other day, he was just absolutely phenomenal. I mean, he was absolutely fantastic, and I'll go so far as say one of the best strikers I've seen in the number nine role that in my time of watching Reading, particularly that season, he was just absolutely fantastic. We're not going to get that now. You know, he's had some good paydays. He's been at some interesting clubs since he left us, but I don't think he ever really reached the form that he had in that last season and that last full season with us. I really hope the club have looked at it as a twofold and think, well, look, we need to raise morale. Let's be honest here. Bringing someone like him back, we'll do that. You know, sell some shirts. It will get people back in the stadium, sort of early doors potentially. But I don't, without doing a disservice to him, I don't see him starting every game. I don't see him contributing massively from a footballing point of view. And I think the fact that he signed a one-year deal shows the kind of I say the confidence level and what he can provide, but you know, he's kind of at the latter end of his career now, and this is a move of love from both parties. So we're not going to see, you know, 20-25 goals. Lucas Joule for me is still the man. I don't care what anyone says. He's still the best striker we've got, and probably could have at this stage with the resources available to us. So he's there to kind of bring some experience. He knows a lot of people around the club still. You know, obviously Noel Hunt's very close with, and it can only be a positive thing for everyone involved. And if he can bring some younger players through and set the right examples in terms of clean living and everything else, that's what we need, because I don't feel we've had that for a long time at the club, and we haven't had it too much. You know, you look at players that we've got now, like Scott Dan, again, another good example of that, where we need to start bringing through the next generation, really embedding the younger players that we've got based on, you know, our financial situation and our transfer restrictions. So he for me, him coming in is a win-win. If he scores a few goals along the way, great. But ultimately, his payoff will be what he leaves behind as a legacy this time around. And that can only be a positive, really.
Yeah, for sure. I'm just flicking through some of his stats from back in the day. And, you know, he's never been the biggest kind of goal scorer or anything. And I think maybe there is a way to work him and Joule together up front. I'm just thinking of a goal that I remember seeing in the first season we're back in the Championship. This is going back to the 10th of October 2009 against Charlton at home. One of the things I remember really well about Shane Long is we're 1-0 down at half-time, really not playing very well at all. And the first thing Shane Long did as soon as he got the ball for the second half was just ran at the Charlton defenders and got fouled in the area, picked himself up and scored the penalty. Scored the second and it ended up being 2-2 in the end. So anyone who watched Shane Long in that era will remember those sorts of just bombing forward runs, getting in amongst it and causing trouble. And maybe he can play the kind of Noel Hunt role to the Jason Roberts of Lucas Joule this season. But I don't think we're going to go with two up front in any case. So we are going to have the other half of this podcast talking about the season ahead and the games and the tactics and whatnot. We'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to the Tilehurst End podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans.
Right then, let's talk about the games that Reading have had this summer and what's coming up. Reading have played Colchester United to kick us off for the summer. 2-0 win, 2-0 defeat to Benfica, 4-0 win over Maidenhead, a 1-1 draw at West Ham, and a 2-0 win over Wimbledon, which is, by all standards, pretty much all right. The Colchester game was funny for me because I felt like I probably wasn't that bothered for the new season starting or anything. And then the club started tweeting about a game, went 1-0 up, went 2-0 up, and I was sat there like, yeah, I'm ready for this now. I'm ready to jump into a car and drive to a stadium and have a beer and watch some football again, 2nd of July, and the fever was back. So, Sim, by all accounts, I think results-wise, these have been absolutely fine. No one would complain about the results. How are you feeling about the performances, though? West Ham, I wasn't impressed by West Ham. Don't get me wrong, they were decent, but I didn't feel like we were bad value for a point in that, and I'm still not sure whether that was us being good or them being bad. How do you feel about the Wimbledon game as well? Because they very easily could have made it 1-1 with a penalty. How's the general feeling from these two games then?
Yeah, I think we've been absolutely fine, to be honest. I don't want to get kind of too high or low or about anything, because obviously there's so much up in the air. What with the quality of the opposition, we're not going to face teams like West Ham or teams like Wimbledon in the season coming up. And obviously there's a lot more players to come in. There's a lot more kind of practice to get into the team. So I don't want to be kind of too judgmental either way. But look, the performances were fine. Nothing kind of outstanding, but the fact that we've come away from those games with a 1-1 draw and a 2-0 win, it's nothing to be scoffed at, because so many times in pre-seasons gone by, we would have gotten hammered in the West Ham game, pun unintended. We wouldn't have beaten Wimbledon in that game either. And it's really important to just grind out results going into the start of the season, because even if you do have more to do on, say, honing things tactically or getting players kind of understanding, getting a bit better at bringing in new players, getting in that winning mentality and that sense of togetherness and spirit and grinding out results is so important, I think. And it's such a big advantage going into the season to kind of get into that mindset and hopefully can carry into Blackpool.
Yes, well, we have Brighton first up on 23rd of July, Saturday, 3 p.m. kickoff at the SCLS. And then, yeah, Blackpool, 30th of July, first up. Cardiff at home, Stevenage at home in the Carabao Cup. And then we go to Rotherham away. And then just to round off August, quite a busy start. Blackburn at home, Middlesbrough at home, Millwall away, and Sheffield United away Tuesday night up in Yorkshire, that one. So, Ben, I feel like as a start, it's pretty championshipy, isn't it? It doesn't feel like there's a couple of, you know, there's a newly promoted team in there. No one that's been relegated, but obviously a team that was in the playoffs last year. I think Cardiff fans are relatively optimistic, but I wouldn't be optimistic if I was a Blackpool fan going into this year, having lost their manager. Blackburn, who knows? Middlesbrough of Millwall, again, are probably going to be hoping to be in amongst it, as 90% of the teams in this league are going to be. So if Reading come out of this stretch with, you know, three wins and a draw or something, I don't think I get ahead of myself, but it would be a pretty bad stretch to kind of lose five of the first six, obviously. But against these teams in particular, I don't think it's the hardest start to the season we could have been given.
No, I think realistically, you know, you look at the Blackpool and Rotherham games in particular, take Stevenage out of the equation for a minute. They're two clubs that are going to be kind of in and around our ballpark, really. You know, we've said, I think we said it before on the transfer pod a couple of weeks ago, but we're bottom six championship side now, whichever way you look at it. So, you know, if we get sort of, you know, 4 to 6 points out of both those games, that's a positive start. It will be nice to beat Stevenage in the cup as well, but not essential. So it's one of those where, you know, as we said previously about the pre-season, there's a bit of resilience creeping into that team now. You know, it's starting to be embedded a little bit more, and we've seen different formations throughout the game, not just, you know, game to game, really. And that's a really positive thing. So there are lots of things that we can look at and say this is different to this time last year. But I just feel that, you know, we suffer a massive loss on the opening game against Blackpool, and it then turns toxic again a little bit. So let's just hope that that doesn't happen, and we get, you know, draw to a win out of that game, and then look to build on that. Cardiff is an interesting one as the first home game, because, you know, they've invested quite a lot. They've got some brand new players in, but they're not having a great pre-season, to be honest. And their fans are already getting a bit twitchy. I think there's quite a few of them already that aren't sure about, you know, Morrison as the manager. So we'll have to see how that one goes. But, you know, you start positively and anything can happen. It's whether or not we do actually start positively, and that sounds absolutely ridiculous. But we've seen before where, you know, in the first season with Pownoe, when we went on that ridiculous run, it was like, okay, this is a team, and then sort of collapsed. And then, you know, last year was very iffy at the start. So it's the start of the season is very, very important, and we do need to get points on the board early, because I do still anticipate us being in a relegation scrap. But I honestly do feel that there are at least three worse teams than us in the league, and that is all we need. I'm hoping that, you know, come Christmas, we're going, how did we even know that we were going to be in a relegation scrap when we're sort of 10 points clear at the top? But at the moment, for me, it's just staying in this league. That's all we need to do.
Speaking of toxic atmospheres and first home games back, are we going to see the return of the Ben Thomas halftime show out of interest? I know you had a little venture down to the pitch late last season, didn't you?
Yeah, no, it was all right, actually. Look, I've been in, you know, they've kind of come back to me, and we've had some chats and getting people into place, and hopefully, you know, the first block of games really before the first international break, which I think is the end of September, you know, we're kind of all booked up and ready to go. So, you know, look, it offers something different. It's not going to be everyone's cup of tea, but all I'm trying to do and all the club are trying to do is just change it up a little bit. And it might not be every game this season. It might not be beyond Christmas that we do it, but, you know, the intention is there to try and offer something a little bit different and kind of bring a few more fans into the fray, really. But yeah, we've got some games lined up, we've got some people lined up. It's a little bit of fun. I haven't been verbally abused yet on the pitch, which is good. So, you know, long may that continue, but that's all we're trying to do, really, just to kind of change it up a little bit. And to be fair, the club are looking at lots of other things that they could do to improve the match that they experience. you know, the negative people would say that it can't get any worse, but there are some things in the pipeline that they're looking at to try and improve the, you know, the experience for everyone involved. So, you know, that can only be a good thing in my book, really.
Yeah, definitely. Well, if you want anyone to dress up as a giant penguin and belly flop down the pitch to the tune of 4,000 away fans cheering and goading, then I know some people I'd like to volunteer for that job. So
I was watching, there was a clip from the Vitality Blast, the cricket, the other day, and it was like it was a mascot race, and it just looked chaos. It was really funny, but I'd love to do something like that at some point, but I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon, unfortunately.
I think Reading have enough mascots for a race now, don't we? We've got a good little relay team going for mascots who can get involved in that. So, I definitely, anyone who wants to kind of, be involved in that or kind of have thoughts, opinions and everything, then Tyler Stend always happy to be a conduit for that. Let's talk tactics then, Sim. I was a bit surprised, maybe I shouldn't have been, because I wasn't doing my homework, but when Reading lined up with the kind of 3-4-3, I guess I would call it, against West Ham, Yeardom and Hoylett as the kind of wing-back midfielder types, with Ajaria and Ince off of Zhao, and then Hendrick and Fauna as the two centre-mids. That switched into a 4-3-3 later on, and then the Wimbledon game started 4-3-3, didn't it? Then switched 3-4-3. I think, given our lack of left wing general at the moment, I'm kind of more for the 3-4-3 at the moment, because it offers the opportunity for McIntyre, Holmes, and Hutchinson to work together. Right, two out of those three, I think you get exposed a lot more than three together with Yeardom and two centre mids. And, you know, whether it's Hoylett or whoever's going to be moving forward, we obviously do need to sign a left wing back. So what's your kind of feeling with the tactics at the moment? Is there a future for this 3-4-3 malarkey?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I went into the West Ham game as well thinking we were going to play a 4-3-3, and I looked at the team and it looked very much like a 4-3-3 that could fit into the kind of the same kind of setup that we had against Benfica. Went into the 3-4-3, as you say, and a bit more like a 5-4-1 out of possession. And it's an interesting one. It looks a lot like some kind of 3-4-3 that Mark Bowen played, ironically, two summers ago, that weird pre-season when it looks like we were going to have Mark Bowen as our manager, and then he left right before the start of the season and Paulo came in.
The glorious day of the 3-6-1, wasn't that?
Exactly, yeah. And I don't know if he's passed it on to Paul Ince somehow, but it looks quite similar in the way that we have kind of two deeper centre midfielders and two more attacking midfielders higher up. A little bit reminiscent of, I think it was a 3-4-3 that Conte played at Chelsea a few years ago as well, maybe. Look, it's interesting. It's something new. I don't know how effective it will be over the course of the season if we stick with it, but it's certainly interesting. And it certainly gets more out of some of the players that we have. The way that we used the back three against Wimbledon, I thought was interesting with the way Tom McIntyre had license to get forward. I think that might have actually been a 3-5-2 for most of the game at Wimbledon, and that was kind of where McIntyre got forward. The idea being kind of get the ball out wide to the wing back, which in this case was Femi Azeez, of all people, as a left wing back. That was very odd. But then he immediately had Tom McIntyre making an underlapping run, and a couple of times we had that extra man in Tom McIntyre making that forward run. And look, it's difficult to pick up, as you see for the goal in the West Ham game, when McIntyre, I think, makes quite a late run after a bit of link-up between Nesta Guinness-Walker and Day and Tetic on the left. They then have something unpredictable in Tom McIntyre suddenly appearing on the scene and being able to get into space and put the cross in. And it's little ideas like this that I want to see us trying out. It's interesting. Similarly, Tom Ince seemed to have quite a free role against Wimbledon. I'm not entirely sure how to sum it up, but it seemed like he was an attacking midfielder in a three for a lot of it. But then he also had the license to kind of pull out wide and act almost as a natural right winger. And it's little things like this that just give you a bit more kind of unpredictability and allow you to break teams down in different ways. But over the last couple of games, we've seen, I think 4-2-3-1 is how I would categorise kind of like the last bit of the West Ham game, 3-4-3 and 3-5-2, different ideas that kind of give us some different things to look at. And obviously the idea of being able to play two up top without surrendering too much control in the centre of the park is something that Reading have kind of dabbled with in the past, certainly under Mark Bowen in his kind of, in the second half of his season. That's something that we looked at. And it might be something that we have to try. Certainly a winner of that would be George Puskas if he happens to stay. I don't think he will stay. I think we'll cash in on him, but there's a possibility, an outside one, that if he doesn't get his move this summer, there is a place for him in this team. Similarly, Liam Moore, you'd expect him to go at some point. Maybe it's on loan kind of halfway through the season. But if he does stay here, similarly, this is a system that could get more out of Liam Moore, given that he's a centre-back that likes to push forward. Maybe he'd go into Tom Holmes' role as kind of like a right-sided centre-half, and he'd be able to get up on that side. Again, something interesting to try out, and looking forward to seeing how this pans out. But again, just to go back to the left wing back, we need to get that in, because this isn't the kind of position you can kind of half-ass and just put a left back there or a winger there, as we've done with Junior Hoylett this pre-season or Femi Aziz this season. You need a specialist left wing back. It elevates the team so much. If you've got someone who knows how to cover the entirety of that flank, defensively, offensively, really covering ground on that side. We've got that in Andy Yeardon on the other side. I like Kelvin Abrafa as well as a backup there, but we need at least one, if not two, players who can play on that side, on the left side, if we're to move forward with this.
Yeah, I think I can ask what position I think we need to sign, or what you guys think we need to sign. I think we'd all agree left wing back is probably the position at the moment. I mean, my general thoughts at the moment are quite like, we haven't got loads of centre mids, but then I'd quite like to see Ajaria drop a bit deeper. I think he was excellent there in the Jose Gomez season when he first arrived on loan. Really good at transitions, can, you know, dribble out of a tight space, you know, stretch out a leg to make a pass, that sort of stuff. I think that we can utilise him there better, given we have a lot of attacking mids now. The worry with 3-4-3 for me is that Lucas Shaw will end up being a bit isolated. He needs his wingers to be a lot tighter to him, because, yeah, as we saw with John Swift last year, making great runs off him, if you don't have that, defenders will triple or double up on him, and that'll be the end of that for Lucas Shaw. I find it very difficult moving forward. We have got a question this week, which I'll put to you, Ben. He's saying, Benjamin Vickers has tweeted us saying, both new keepers seem good. Who starts at Blackpool? We didn't talk too much in the transfer part of the show about the interesting decisions to not only have Luke Southwood, with Jochel Andersen, the youngster, going forward this season. We've also signed Joe Lumley and, of course, Dean Buzanis. What do we do now? In my opinion, I don't think Southwood's quite good enough at the moment, or generally. Lumley did keep a fair few clean sheets last season for a decent Middlesbrough team, and he did actually have a really good game against West Ham. I've not seen Buzanis play yet myself, but obviously a decent goalkeeper to have been a mainstay in a very decent Sutton team, albeit a couple leagues below. So, Ben, who'd you go with for the first weekend?
We've had one question. It's an absolute stinker of a question. It's really hard to answer. I think a lot will depend on who starts the game on Saturday against Brighton. I'd like to think that the players that he's got at his disposal at the moment, in terms of Ince, the players that he will look to potentially play against Blackpool will be certainly starting the game on Saturday. That's my thinking behind the last pre-season friendly anyway. I would be very surprised if it isn't Lumley. And the reason for that is he has been very, very vocal in the games that I've seen him play this pre-season. His distribution has been good. Shot stopping has been pretty solid. You know, particularly against West Ham, he was kind of on the ball, really. So I would be very surprised if it isn't Lumley starting.
Are you happy with that?
Again, without sounding like a broken record, it's where we are, you know.
I've been watching a lot of Tory leadership debates recently. I've noticed people who don't answer the question. But I know what you mean. It is difficult, isn't it? Because I think it's probably Lumley's to lose, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, to answer your question directly, Mark, I think out of the pool of goalkeepers that we've got, then yeah, he's the best option at the moment. I mean, Southwood, I'm very surprised that he's still here. You know, we were all big fans of Southwood sort of early part of last season when he came in for Raphael. And, you know, as we've said, time again, he won, I think, the most awards for player of the month from our site. So I'm very, very surprised at the situation that has gone that way. But Ince clearly doesn't rate him. So we have to move on from that debate, really. So I would be happy with Lumley in there. As you say, it is his to lose until he makes a mistake. If he does, then, you know, he knows he's got Bazanis to come in afterwards. I don't know if this has been confirmed by the club, but I did actually see Jocko Andersen leaving the stadium on Saturday, kind of limping, and he wasn't in any gear or anything. He was just in one of those, you know, polo tops. So I don't know if he's injured at the moment or what, I'm not sure. But, you know, at the moment, it seems to be a straight fight between Lumley and Bazanis, but I'd be very, very surprised if it's not Lumley in goal against Blackpool on the 30th.
No, I think you probably should go with the player with more experience to start with, and they're probably very aware that Lumley is only on loan as well, of course, so maybe Bazanis will be the first choice next season if he can take that place in the coming weeks and months, one of the many subplots that's going to be unfolding at Reading this season. So let's end the show then with a quick, not linger too much on, because we will have a season preview podcast coming up where we'll look more at, you know, ahead, as we've spent much of this show looking back across the summer so far. Then just a quick one really as to whether your expectation for the season has improved. Has your sense, we'll start with you, Sim, that I think we're all saying beating relegation, maybe a lot of fans thought we were getting relegated, or mid-table or whatever. How has your kind of needle on that scale adjusted over the last few weeks?
Well, my general sense for this season is that we don't need to be particularly brilliant this season to stay up. What we need to be is a coherent, compact, organised, motivated team, which I think are actually quite basic things. But if you combine them with the ability to put the ball in the net, i.e. keeping Yaku Mate fit, keeping Lucas Schwell fit, you put that combination in there and we're going to be able to grind out enough points to stay up relatively comfortably, I think. And when you look at the players we've brought in, sure, they're flawed in some ways. Maybe they're a bit old in some cases, maybe a bit injury prone, they'll prove to be over the course of the season. But I think these are fundamentally good eggs, good characters, players that are going to be able to buy into this sense of unity and really having a good spirit. And if we can do that, and if we can have that kind of right attitude, I think we're going to be absolutely fine, especially given that we do still have individual quality. I know it feels like we don't have it now that John Swift's gone and Andy Winamota and Josh Laurent have gone, but we do still have the ability to nick tight games with individual ability in those individual moments. And yeah, at the minute, I think we're fine. I'll feel a lot more confident if we can bring in a left back or two, some centre midfield cover as well. But at the minute, I think we're moving in the right direction to where we need to be to stay up.
Ben, what are you thinking?
I think it's a great opportunity for the players that are left to step up and show some resilience that we've seen in pre-season and go from there. You know, we mentioned Ajaro briefly. People like, you know, Ince Jr., for example, they've all got to step up now and take the other players with them. Short answer is yes, I think we've got enough to stay up. But ultimately, it's up to Ince now, Ince Senior, to kind of get these players playing regularly. You know, the character, as Sim said, I think is going to be a lot better than it was last year. I don't see those players at the moment, you know, going missing in games, although it might well be a naive comment at this stage of pre-season. But the key for me is the home form. You know, last season was miserable because we were getting, you know, dumped away and we weren't doing very well at all at home and it was just a horrible atmosphere. And I don't see anything now being anywhere near that bad, really. I think the expectations are, you know, amongst the fan base are exactly where they need to be. I don't think anyone's getting carried away. There's a lot of tongue-in-cheek about, you know, boats and winning the league and all this sort of stuff. But
HMS, I can't remember.
Something the league, but you know, look, it's a lot more positive than it's been for a long time. And there's a lot of people that need to take a lot of credit for that, really. But you know, again, the short answer is I think we will stay up. I think we've got enough to do that. How comfortable that will be, I don't know. But I think we've got enough there And I've seen enough in this short period to say that we've got a very, very good chance of staying up.
Yeah, I think that's but I mean, both of you, I think, speak very wisely on that. I think it's the situation at the moment is that obviously what we've seen from the players so far will be completely irrelevant about 25 minutes into the Blackpool game, where we will discover so much more, and we'll obviously preview that properly in a week's time. But yeah, from where we are now compared to where we were a month ago, I am happier. Am I significantly happier? Yeah, I was never expecting us to pull any rabbits out of the hat or, you know, the magic money trees, this sort of stuff. But I think given the circumstances, we have done a solid 7 out of 10 for the summer so far. And off the pitch, I'd say it's been pretty decent as well. So we've not even covered, unfortunately, the academy being, it seems to have been downgraded. I'll try and make time for that in a later show where we can go a bit more in depth on it. But ideally, have it confirmed by the club as well before we start going on to it. But yeah, otherwise, I think it's been an okay summer that has made, as I said at the start of the show, if that squad a month ago was the 24th, I think we're kind of hovering around 20th, 21st with this one at the moment. And there is plenty of scope left for the rest of the summer to see what we can bring in. And with that, that brings an end to the show. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll be back to properly preview the season in about a week's time. We've got Brighton first up, though, in a friendly, and then it's off to Blackpool to start the season for proper. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you guys for coming on as well. I have a feeling some thunder's about to interrupt this recording. So very, very brief thank you for you guys.
Cheers.
Pleasure, Mark. Thanks, Sam. Take care, boys.
And let the downpours commence. So I don't know if you can hear that microphone on this this Wednesday night recording. But yeah, thanks everyone for listening. It's great to be back on the podcast bandwagon. Let's see what this final week of the summer brings before the season begins. Come on, you ask.